The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
The newly rebranded Fire Breslow podcast presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. I am Chris Felico, your host, the Italian Stallion, joined by Jeremy, the Irish Goodbye Schilling, and Terry Positive Cushman. Boys, we lost 2 of 3 to the Atlanta Braves. Pretty miserable fashion. Peyton Tolley, not the most efficient, although he went 4 2/3, 7 strikeouts. You have 2 earned runs. What was your guys' thoughts on the game? And then obviously Peyton Tolley.
The game is a microcosm of what this team has been the whole year. I'm sure we're going to get into that in more detail. With regards to Tolley, you know, Braves have the best lineup in baseball, I think. This is the second time facing them in a week. And I thought he battled and I thought he gave the team a chance to win the game. You know, he really pounds the strike zone. He comes right after hitters and he dares them to beat him with balls in play, which we can't say that about Craig Weissert, for example, who walked in a run. We're going to talk about that later. But, you know, I like that he comes at hitters and he doesn't back down. I think Connelly early is the same way. I think it was a tough spot, again, against a really good Braves lineup that just keeps coming at you with superstar and a really deep, potent lineup. At the time he handed the ball to Chad Tracy, the Red Sox had a chance to win. Do you wish you could go 7 innings like Connelly early did yesterday? Of course. But it's a tall task against that lineup on back-to-back starts, essentially. So, look, I'm optimistic that Tolley is going to be a big leaguer for a long time. His personality, I think, is going to play really, really well in Boston. And I'm a fan, and he's part of one of the bright spots as we – get through this dumpster fire of a season.
Yeah, so with each Peyton Tolley start, you're kind of hoping to see a little bit more. You're hoping to see some progression, maybe a little bit more balance. But the last 3 times out, it's just been fastball, sinker. You know, he's relying on velocity to try to get guys out. And I think teams are kind of starting to figure him out. I mean, he couldn't go 5 full innings today. And first inning, 3 up, 3 down. Second inning, 3 up, 3 down. Third inning, not too bad. But then the Braves knew exactly how to attack him in the fourth inning. And he gave up a ton of hits. I think a leadoff double to Acuna. And Dom Smith drove in what ended up being the second run of the inning. And I just don't think you can live on that. You need off speed. You need a 3 or 4 pitch arsenal to navigate. And the fourth inning would have been a great time to pivot, you know, to attacking them differently. Yesterday, it was the complete opposite with Connelly early. You know, he scuffled a little bit, but he made the adjustments and kind of won the battle against that lineup and attacked them. Today, it was Tolley coming out, pounding the zone, just like Jeremy said. But in this case, it was the Braves adjusting to him and, you know, and really kind of getting the better of him. I mean, he gave up two earned, you know, it's not like he got lit up, but what you're seeing right now is the makeup of a relief pitcher, not a starting pitcher. And I know he's going to be a starting pitcher, but we need to see some evolution here.
You were going to say something there, Jeremy?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good take, Terry. The truth is he threw a curveball early in the game and gave up a double to left center that got absolutely smoked, and then I don't think he threw another one. Certainly not for a strike. So that's a really good point. I just think his stuff's good enough to get by. I think the fact that he's only a two-pitch pitcher for the most part is part of the problem facing the second team in back-to-back starts. So, but it's a good take. I mean, it's there. I watched the first three innings at the office and then listened to the rest of the game on the radio. And the radio team mentioned that he just doesn't trust his other stuff that he worked on all spring training. So, I mean, it's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, he gave up two earned runs, so I'm not overly concerned with that. It's the fact that, to your point, Terry, you're waiting for that ascension of Peyton Tolley to become this pitcher who is just going to absolutely come in there and just go a little bit further and find a way to not only dominate with this power, but find those other off-speed pitches to kind of add to that arsenal to take him into six or seven innings more consistently. And he's just not there yet. And I think he really is the epitome of this team, is because there, you know, there's some nights and some starts where he's able to go seven innings and overpower a lineup on two pitches, right? And rely on that just pure power pitching. And then there's other nights or days where he just hasn't been able to. And I mean, when you look at the Sox, even since the last time that we played the Braves, right? We got swept by the Braves, then we swept a team, then we got swept, and then we just lost two out of three. And even if we had swept the series, we would be 500 since the last Braves series. And that's with three sweeps in the midst of that. And that's kind of the problem with the Sox, is that even when they're quote-unquote winning series, they're still losing because they can't take advantage of it. And this lineup is still a problem, right? I mean, we all know that. Let's just face the facts. But I think, you know, you look at even Chris Sale tonight. He was very similar to Peyton Tolley in the sense that he threw about 96 pitches. I think he only went a third inning more. The difference is when they turned it over to the bullpen, it was lights out. And when you turn it over to the Red Sox bullpen, it's game over for us, because the other team is just going to find every chink in this armor that is the Boston Red Sox bullpen, because there's nothing we can rely upon. I mean, the only positive that we've had is Aroldis Chapman and Whitlock just landed on the 15-day DL. So, or IL. So at this point, I don't know where we go from here, but it doesn't look too bright with the Red Sox. I think if you're looking forward, what is something that you want to at least try and hold your hat, or that you think we can build upon coming out of the series? If anything.
Starting pitching. Starting pitching. Look, again, Tolley was not great. How many guys in the league can you really say you expect to go six or seven innings every time out? The fact that Tolley, for the second time in a row, gave you a chance to beat the best team in baseball, I think says something. Connelly early, coming off seven innings against that same lineup. You know, except for Bayo, I feel like the pitching is going to give you a chance to win the game. That's the only thing, starting pitching, that's the only thing we can hang our hat on, because I'll tell you this about the bullpen. They do it to themselves. You know, if it's Tolley, he's going to come at you, and if you beat him, it's because you're going to get the hit that beats him. This dumpster fire they rolled out today, bunt for a hit, walk, 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 walk in a run, grand slam on a middle fastball. Like, I'm sorry, that is non-competitive from the bullpen. And I can accept if you come and challenge a hitter and you put the ball and hit your spot as a pitcher and they beat you, I can accept that. What I can't accept is when you just hand it over. So I don't know if it's usage or Weiser goes to the same shrink as Bayo, who is not a good shrink, by the way. But the moment is too big for Weiser. He came into today with 50% of the inherited runner scoring. And after all three scored today, he's obviously now more than 50%. That's mental. That's not, I'm throwing good pitches and they're just beat me. That's mental. You can't pitch the way, for example, Connelly Early does, which is just trust your stuff and hit your spots. And so the pitching, which, you know, again, Craig Breslow took a victory lap last week on the run prevention unit, and the pitching's been great. And here are the stats for this. The bullpen's a dumpster fire. It's a dumpster fire. They can't get key outs. The guy they keep bringing in to get the inherited runners is doing a less than 50% job at it. I'm irrationally angry by the sixth inning today. It's self-inflicted.
So my final thought on Tolley, and then it'll kind of transition into the bullpen here. Teams know how to attack him now. So he's going to have to figure it out. He's going to have to make some adjustments because they're going to come in. I mean, the cat's out of the bag. They're like, he's fastball heavy, fastball sinker heavy. That's what we're going to sit on. And I think the outings are going to be, you know, shorter and possibly shorter. And then what that leads to is a much bigger middle relief effort for the bullpen. And you just don't have those guys in there that can hold it down. Weissert today, that was a middle meatball. That's what Acuna crushed and hit it clear over the monster. And that's what Greg Weissert is. And Chad Tracy was asked about it after the game, and I watched like a 90-second clip, and he just said, well, we're just so limited with righties. That spot called for a righty, and he's the guy that we had. We had already used Guerrero. So I don't know if that's Chad Tracy defending the move or him just simply saying it's all we have and we're just hoping for the best. I don't know. I don't know what exactly he meant by that, but these guys just aren't going to hold it down. And coming into this series, we were getting longevity out of our starting pitchers, and some of the beat writers pointed out the Red Sox had the second best bullpen in Major League Baseball in terms of ERA, but that was because all the pitchers for the last 2-3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks, have been going at least six innings. So you're only needing one guy to get through the seventh inning before you turn it over to Whitlock and Chapman. Arguably one of the best 1-2 punches in the eighth and ninth. Perhaps there's a couple teams better, you know, that have a better 1-2 punch, but this is pretty damn good. And, you know, it's almost as good as Tozawa Uehara, you know, the Japanese connection there that we had for a little while. I can't remember if Kimbrel had a really good eighth inning guy, but you had Barden Papelbon for a while. This is pretty good, but the problem with that is Garrett Whitlock is injury prone as hell. I don't know how he got through last season without a major DL stint or IL stint. Thanks, Chris, for getting me to say it wrong. I guess what I'm getting at here, before I turn it back to you guys, it was a very deceptive second-ranked bullpen. And it was only that high because your starting pitching went deep so that it didn't get exposed to the level that it's getting exposed to now.
So the person who set up Kimbrel was Matt Barnes, I believe.
Barnes for a while. Yeah, he was up and down, but he had one really good year at least. But
well, and they tried to turn him into a closer, and that was, you know, he looked good in certain spots, but was very up and down. But anyway, I think both of you made really good points, and I think to your point, Terry, yeah, I mean, we definitely covered up a lot of the warts for the bullpen the last month, and I think that's the most concerning part is that, to your point, Jeremy, like, we couldn't ask for more out of the starting rotation, putting ourselves in a good position to not have the bullpen have to come in, and we still didn't even play 500 or better over the last month, getting the recipe that we needed. Good starting pitching, avoid the middle relief bullpen, and get a lead over to Whitlock and Chapman. Couldn't do it. And to your point, Jeremy, is this bullpen, when you have the bases loaded, like, today was so different than normal. Usually we turn it over to them, it's the eighth inning and the bases are loaded, and you're like, all right, we're going to give up a run, that's over. It was the sixth inning. It's like, okay, bases are loaded. Like you said, make them beat you. And if the guy rips a single or has a deep fly ball and they score, they tag a run, and that's all they get is a run there, you live with it. You still have three more innings to try and tie this game. But meatballs down the middle, two pitches, and the next thing you know, you walk in a run, grand slam, game's over. And it's just, it's very disheartening at this point because you can't get much more out of your starting pitching. This lineup is so Jekyll and Hyde as far as scoring runs. Like yesterday, they were world beaters, and they didn't even hit a home run, or I think they only got one home run from Jaron Duran. Everything was scored off of singles, and they score 8-7 runs. And then today, I mean, Wilson Contreras, you see him get hit by that pitch, and he's yelling, "I like it," to Chris Sale. And then he's got second and third, one out, and he's striking out. This lineup is just atrocious at this point. But I want to turn the page here because the series is over. I don't know what's going to happen with the Sox. But interestingly enough, there's been reports. Craig Breslow seems like he neither knows he's on thin ice or knew he was on thin ice coming into this season. And it's just very interesting that these reports are starting to surface because we've been saying it's time to get rid of Craig Breslow. And I think the world has been on board with getting rid of Craig Breslow. Now the media is having all these stories start to surface where there's smoke, there generally is fire. How long do you think the leash is for Craig Breslow?
I think it could be this week if they don't play well in the Cleveland series. Absent a turnaround like in the next 10 to 20 days where they start to build some momentum, I just don't think he'll be here on July 1 as we're 30 days away from the trade deadline. I will say this about this media tour that Craig Breslow is doing. It feels really desperate. It feels like he's trying to say, it's fine, it's fine. You know, the meme with the guy sitting in the middle of the fire drinking the cup of coffee. But when you're going out and taking every interview, it you're trying to portray that it's fine. But by doing the interview itself, you're not fine. Because it's out of character. You know, and then I mentioned this on Monday night. This weekend or over the weekend, Carl Ravitch somehow got an interview with Theo Epstein, who hasn't talked to the media in years. And then coming out of that, now Craig Breslow goes on his media tour. It smells. Something's there.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And Epstein is basically the only guy, I guess. I mean, technically he is an owner, but he's one of the only people above Breslow that's kind of said nice things. You haven't had that endorsement from Sam Kennedy necessarily, or John Henry saying Breslow's my guy, and it's been very quiet and it's getting louder. I mean, the media is asking him, you know, are you worried about your job security? I mean, that was a big topic a couple days ago. And, you know, maybe he had a very brief reprieve with a big win yesterday, 10 to, or I think it was like 7-1 or something like that, 7-0, something like that. Yeah. And so nobody's really standing up for Craig Breslow. And if you go back to the Bloom situation at the very end, he was very isolated. Nobody was hanging out with him. Nobody was associating with him because I think they knew he was Audi 5000 by the end of the season. And it did happen. I think it was September 6th. So it was the first week of September. They cut him loose. I don't think the Red Sox have that luxury this year. And it could happen next week. I was wondering if it could happen tonight. I mean, we haven't really seen anything. Maybe they'll wait till Saturday, you know, when everybody's busy doing weekend stuff now that the weather's nice and all that. That's when Cora got it. So I don't know, but whatever Breslow thought he could do to right the ship has not worked. Chad Tracy is two games under 500 in his tenure. And I think it just needs to happen soon. You can roll with an interim guy in that front office. and get through the season. But I just don't think they can just let this thing burn until August or September. Like, it needs to be quick.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to go that far. You both made very astute points, and I think what's rearing its ugly head is that every move that Craig Breslow has made, specifically this offseason, and even going back into last offseason, has backfired. He gives an extension to Campbell, doesn't even play. Roman Anthony gets an extension. He's hurt. Sam Kennedy also lies about his injuries. I'm sure Jeremy was going to bring it up at some point because Sam Kennedy lies in everyone's eyes, but mostly Jeremy's. He signs Garrett Crochet to an extension. Again, he gets injured, but unforeseen. Trades Harrison, trades for Durbin. Everything he does just doesn't work for the Red Sox. And this team isn't working. And outside of going 5-1, maybe 4-2 over the Cleveland and then Baltimore series following, in which both series I think they have to win, I think if they don't do that, he might be out after the Baltimore series. And that would be so poetic because it was against the Baltimore Orioles that Alex Cora got fired. So
it's an interesting point.
I think that if we don't go at least 4-2 with two series wins, or 5-1 and sweep one of these teams, I think the writing's on the wall. I think the point that you made, Jeremy, as far as like Theo Epstein coming out of the woodwork, I haven't heard Theo speak to the media in years. I think it was like something was doing in Chicago. I don't even remember him talking to the media when he came back to Boston. It smells, as you said. And I think it's just the right time, because if you let him stay any longer, the fear you have to have is this guy start heating up Hail Marys and just start making dumb trades to save his job. And what does that do to our franchise?
First of all, he doesn't have the balls to go attempt dumb trades. He doesn't. All right. So I'm not concerned.
Well, Jeremy, he's done dumb trades already.
Yeah, just not on a major level. I mean, the Durbin trade was dumb, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think he's going to, what I mean by that is I don't think he's going to go package a bunch of prospects, attach, you know, Duran and fire one last cannonball. He just doesn't have the balls to do it. And he really hasn't done anything major in season in his tenure. So I just don't think that club is in his bag. My concern is when we eventually get our way, we are worse off now than when we were in a search that ultimately resulted in Breslow getting the job. So you have made it, you haven't improved the view of the organization and that job in baseball in the 3 years since he's had it. So if you think going to Breslow, which I think was the 12th candidate,
13th.
And I think 14th, the far majority of those declined to even interview, which is like so disrespectful. Where are you going from the organizational viewpoint to say it's going to be better this time? We're going to be able to find someone that actually has experience. Because remember, Craig Breslow did not have any experience in this role or even in an assistant role like this. Unless you're already working the phones and making assurances to somebody that has pedigree to do this job, the next person could be worse.
That's hard to imagine. I'm not saying it's not possible. I mean,
I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying it's a real possibility, though.
Yeah, I mean, there are executives out there that are available. And according to recent reports, one of the big sticking points was the new executive was going to have to keep Alex Cora. He was going to be the manager no matter what. And nobody wanted to come in here when the manager doesn't get held accountable, but the other executives do. Like, nobody wanted that.
Great point. You know,
that's, I bring this up sometimes, but that's why you don't want a Jason Varitek guy as your manager, because he's so wildly popular. He's always going to be way more popular than the GM. And maybe that's kind of normal in certain circumstances. You know, I mean, I can't imagine Francona is ever going to be less popular than any GM, you know, he works for. You know, some managers are like that, but you know, just go get a guy that can be an adult in the room, give him the freedom and flexibility. I mean, we'll spend a few minutes here talking about the revelations of what the proposals are coming into the labor negotiations. But I don't know if there's going to be a luxury tax going forward. But we'll see. But that person's going to have the blessing of John Henry to spend, you know, the amount of money it's going to take to be competitive. That new executive is going to have the authority to hire his own manager, to change the hitting and possibly pitching philosophies. And you're basically going to have to go back to the Epstein Dombrowski era of Red Sox baseball, where those guys were the boss. Yeah, maybe they had a hard number, you know, but it was never, I don't remember Dombrowski ever being handcuffed, you know, as far as spending. I don't remember Epstein ever being that. I think they had a reasonable leash. So that's what's going to happen. Whoever is willing to do it is going to have assurances for John Henry, from John Henry. And this whole front office needs to be gutted. It needs to be gutted. I mean, all the 20-year people need to go. If those people were so valuable, we wouldn't have sucked this bad for the last handful, well, 7 years. more than handful of years. Yeah. So that's what's going to happen. And, you know, so we'll see. But man,
To your point, Terry, from the sell the team community, of which I might be the president, one way to get a real baseball person in here is to have Henry go back to the way it was and to commit major dollars, get rid of Driveline, if the guy coming in doesn't want launch and all this nonsense, get rid of it. You know, and go get super, tell the GM has to say, I want to go get a couple superstars, we'll pay for the superstars. And essentially, this job has been so badly handled in the last 7 years, the new guy might have the leverage to say, John, you're going back to the way it was 2018 and prior, or I'm not even going to interview.
Well, I want to interrupt for a second, because I don't want to come at the two of you, but I also don't think it's necessarily fair to suggest that Craig Breslow has been completely hamstrung, because at the end of the day, we are still spending a lot of money for this bullshit roster. It's not like he's not allowed to spend anything. He has the sixth highest payroll in the MLB. 12. Now, granted, is it 2018 era? No. Is it Theo Epstein? It's probably closer to Theo Epstein than Dombrowski. I think Dombrowski actually probably spent more and Theo Epstein. The other thing is we said that he doesn't have the balls to pull off trade. He traded the highest paid player in Red Sox history in Rafael Devers and has nothing to show for it. So granted, money may have been a reason, him being a locker room cancer, but he still made that trade, and it was in season coming off of a sweep of the New York Yankees when we literally were feeling as high as possible. So I don't necessarily know if I buy that he listen, desperate people do desperate things. And while Craig Breslow may be a moron, that's what makes it even scarier. Is a moron that knows he's about to die may do the most moronic thing ever. And he's already done pretty dumb things. To me, the way to fix this, I agree it has to go back to spending money a lot less frivolously than we have been. Have Theo Epstein lead the search. You want to buy equity with the Red Sox fans? What, Terry, you want John Henry to lead the search?
Oh,
No. Jeremy, I'm sorry. Jeremy shaking his head.
I think that the people that want Veritek to be the manager are the same people that think that Theo wants that job again. Veritek is never going to manage the Red Sox, and Theo Epstein is never going to be the chief baseball operator.
I'm not saying for him to be the chief baseball. I said lead the search for the next person.
Oh, I take back my head shake then.
To me, like, I feel better about Theo Epstein as a quote-unquote owner, so there's the excuse. He could, as part of the ownership group, be a part of the search instead of John Henry and
Theo. Oh, no, I love that.
Yeah. Let a guy who's done it, had success, is quote-unquote part owner, lead the search. Because if you remember, we brought Craig Breslow, and then shortly after he came back to Boston, Theo Epstein, as a quote-unquote advisor. But to me, like, clean house, I agree with Terry. I don't want to see anything. Let Theo Epstein lead this search. Get Sam Kennedy out of the mix. Hide him somewhere in a cellar. I don't care what you do with him. And John Henry, smoke a cigar on a yacht. And let Theo do his job and find the next guy who's going to lead us into the next century of baseball.
I mean, I've basically given that exact take, you know, multiple times. And, you know, my logic has been he's credible. There's not a person in the industry that does not respect Theo Epstein. He's universally liked and respected. He has humility. He's a great communicator. He connects with people. And that's important. Sam Kennedy, I mean, you know, I mentioned in the last show, he was the one who plucked Bloom out of Tampa. And I think a lot of us liked it at the time. We thought, okay, well, Tampa's an organization that knows how to develop and identify talent and all that. And I'm not going to say we got the dumbest guy, but clearly he wasn't the one making the sauce, because Tampa has continued to be brilliant, you know, in almost a decade since Bloom left. And then when that didn't work, he being Sam Kennedy, went and got Craig Breslow. And by the way, and I mentioned this on the last show, he turned down Thad Levine, who was the number two under Derek Falvey in the Minnesota Twins organization. He was the runner-up to Breslow. We would probably be way better off had they just went with Levine instead. And if I'm not mistaken, excuse me, I got the hiccups. If I'm not mistaken, I think he's a fairly local guy as well. Not quite as much as Derek Falvey, who's probably my first choice to do it, if he was willing to. But yeah, I mean, I think Levine, he has the resume of a competent executive.
Jeremy, any thoughts?
I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to go into possible candidates. I agree that I think Henry should be in the room, so that he individually is giving the prospect confirmation that he's going to be the owner that the new guy wants. And I do think Theo should be the person that ultimately has the power internally to make the decision on who to hire. I would take Sam Kennedy out of the equation altogether.
Yeah, he needs to be reassigned.
He needs to be reassigned. I'm not going to do it. I just got baited into a
Sam Kennedy.
Oh, wait. We got to bring this up, since apparently Roman Anthony has a partially torn ligament attached to that finger. And Kennedy was on WEEI last week saying, no, the imaging came back clean and blah, blah, blah.
Intolerance.
And that kind of, I think, somewhat aligns with Michael Hawley saying the Red Sox lie about injuries, and then Jaron Duran subsequently calling him out for that statement and then deleting his account. Like, this is such a clown show right now. So, you know, who knows? If he's got a torn ligament, I mean, that sounds serious. And, I mean, you're probably looking at a 60-day IL stint at this point.
Yeah, no, and then that's what I was referencing is the joke with, as far as Sam Kennedy lying about injuries, is the reality is he brings no credibility to the Boston Red Sox. He has been 0% part of the winning for this organization. Theo Epstein should just assume his role and responsibilities. We should hide him. And yeah, I mean, if Roman Anthony has a torn ligament in his ring finger, which is what's being reported now at this point, who knows how long he's going to be out, because you need your ring finger to swing. So I don't know. I'm not going to start naming candidates either, Jeremy. I agree. I think it's hard to see who's a clear favorite at this part of who makes sense. But what I know is what we have, and the way we are doing it doesn't make sense. Go ahead.
Have you guys thought of this? What if the people in baseball, like Terry said, the people in baseball universally think highly of Theo Epstein, high character guy. Like, I've never heard anybody say anything negative about him. And he took two teams that had historically terrible failures in trying to win and broke curses and just did this unbelievable job that's going to make him a Hall of Famer. What if people in baseball think about Sam Kennedy the same way we think about Sam Kennedy? I mean,
It's probably true.
And that might be the scariest reason of all, because who's going to want to deal with the Red Sox? Who with an actual pedigree to come and fix this is going to want to? I mean, part of what they may say is, look, I'll come, but I need Sam Kennedy fired before I'm even interviewed. Or if Sam Kennedy's in the room, I'm not talking to you guys. Like, I think that's a real possibility.
I think Henry gets lumped in there, too. I don't think he's a likable owner based on, you know, how he's treated past executives. When he fired Dombrowski, it wouldn't even have a press conference to talk about it. Heim Bloom didn't get it either. Well, maybe Kennedy spoke to the media, but so it's just it's a very toxic organization from the top down. So that has to change.
Well, a lot of his reputation and it being so poor now has to do with Sam Kennedy, because he's allowed Sam Kennedy to be the spokesperson of the Boston Red Sox for way too long. The truth is that I think that John Henry used to be a likable owner, and I think players wanted to play for him when he spent money. There was a winning culture. We won four World Series in a very short period of time after winning none for 86 years. And all that changed when John Henry decided that, all right, I'm in the business of buying sports teams, making them super profitable, and then someone else is going to be the spokesperson for each one. And he chose Sam Kennedy for the Boston Red Sox, which has just taken away all of our credence and dignity as an organization. And I think that if he were to fire Sam Kennedy or openly reassign him to save him, you know, from egg on Sam's face to try and at least hide him somewhere, everyone will know what it means. That's the only way he's going to get favorability. But I also think that there's some owners and organizations that probably like it. Like, they're not going to do anything to help us and telling us, like, hey, do you realize how much everyone hates Sam Kennedy? It gives everyone a competitive advantage over the Boston Red Sox, who, say what you want, like I said, still spend the sixth most money in baseball. So if I'm another owner, another front office, I love this. Because it's like, oh, wow, they still have this moron running this clown show circus, and no one sees it. At least the people that need to see it don't see it. And no one serious is going to want to work for them, which leaves all the rest for them.
Well, simplify it even more. What if one of the one of the guys that Terry mentioned comes in and says, listen, here's what I want to run. I want to be able to pick my own manager. I want to get rid of Driveline. I want to install my philosophy, and I want $265 million a year to do it. And Sam Kennedy says, yeah, sure, we're behind you. Are you going to believe that after you sign the contract and go and get into the office and are given the budget, it's going to be what you want? He'll lie about anything.
Well, I agree with you, Jeremy. I think that if someone serious is looking at this job, they're going straight to John Henry, and they're going to need to hear it from him and know that Sam Kennedy is not involved.
Yeah.
Because to your point, he could say, yeah, all he wants, but he has proven time and time again that he could tell you yes to your face. Hell, do almost everything besides put it on paper and then still wiggle his way out of it.
So somebody needs to do a long clip of all of Sam Kennedy's lies with a quick blurb proving how blatant of a lie it is. That, I don't know how long it would go on. I guess it could just run for days. But, I mean, it's unbelievable that he can still sit there with a straight face and lie to us and think that we don't get it. It's crazy. I hate Sam Kennedy. Let's get off the.
You know, let's switch subjects here, because you know what? This is inevitable that Craig Breslow is going to be out. We don't know exactly when. Let's be on the lookout for it, because I think it's going to be sooner than later. Another report that came out, and we'll close on this, is some of the talks as far as the bargaining agreement that will inevitably more than likely lead to a baseball lockout. The reports suggest that they are miles and miles apart from reaching an agreement that is going to lead to baseball being played in 2027. What is your guys' thoughts of heading into a lockout? Is this good for the Boston Red Sox?
No. And I mean, because everything is just so unsettled right now in terms of the roster, in terms of the front office, it's just an absolute dumpster fire. And to have to carry this through an empty strike season with all this uncertainty, this is bad. I think it's probably worse for the Red Sox than any other team. And the proposal today by the owners was that they want to implement a floor. And we've all said we've needed this for a long time, of $171 million. Okay. Now the Marlins are $92 million below that. So I don't think the Marlins would be necessarily thrilled with this. And the floor isn't the problem. The problem is they finally said today, officially, through their representation, that they want a hard salary cap, just like all the other sports. And they set that number at $245 million. We're already above that this year. So we would be cutting our legs off, to some degree. And I don't know what this means for the Dodgers, because they've got those massive contracts that aren't going anywhere anytime soon. You know, Otani probably has 7 or 8 years left. Yamamoto, maybe 1 or 2 more years than that. I can't remember if they extended Sasaki or not. But lots of big money there. So I don't know what the particulars are with that, but no way in hell do the players agree to this. Like, they will not accept a salary cap of any form. And the most frustrating thing to me about it is nobody's forcing the owners to spend $500 million a season, and nobody's spending that, I don't think. The Dodgers might be a tick over $400 million, but you don't have to spend it. And I think a World Series can be won on the $245 million that they're trying to cap it at. I think you could win if you have smart executives who can build good pitching programs, good hitting programs. You can win a championship for that amount of money. This is stupid.
All right. So opening offers like this, especially in a major negotiation, are always, no one is expecting the person making the offer, the person receiving the offer, no one's expecting people to accept it. These are the opening salvo in what's going to be long, protracted, highly contentious negotiations. What that number signifies to me is a starting point for a cap that's still going to be there. They're going to strike. They're going to lock the players out. And the sticking point will be the cap. But the cap, I think, in my opinion, is going to be something like $375 million. They got to start putting a bookmark in somewhere to stop the extreme high end. And one thing I know the owners know is there's never going to be a $245 million cap. There will be a cap. That will not be the number. So the one thing I like is that it's finally started, which is the conversations and the negotiations. Because if we continue to hear momentum from this, which I do not believe we will hear, then there's a chance that they can have some time to build in some common ground so that even if there's a strike, it doesn't affect the season. Now, what I think is going to happen is this whole thing is going to go radio silent right up until spring training, when there's going to be a rushed attempt to try to use the leverage of the season to get momentum. And it's not going to be enough time, and we're going to lose at least a portion of the 2027 season. So, you know, from the perspective of that, they're trying to talk. That's positive. the initial offers are just starting points. And a lot of the points that are in the proposal from both the Players Association and the owners are really there to be given away for the major point, which is the cap.
Yeah, I agree with both of you on some points, although I think when it comes to the cap, I agree there's going to be a cap. I don't know if 375 seems high only because the 2026 Dodgers are at 413, so they are a tick over, Terry, on the $400 million. But the thing is, they've been crying for a cap MLB since the Dodgers were closer to about $345, $350 million. So to me, 375 is still a little bit higher than that number. I would foresee somewhere like 325 to 350. I think maybe more realistic where everyone agrees between at least owners and then players. Players are never going to be happy. I mean, you could tell them it's $500 million, you're not going to be happy. But I do agree with you, Terry, on your point that a team could spend, I don't know about 245, but I mean, the Blue Jays last year, gun to my head, I want to say they spent about $255 million on the 2025 Blue Jays roster, and they were 0.2 seconds away from winning the World Series if the tag wasn't on time at home. And the difference in $413 million to $255, that extra almost $170 million is not 0.2 seconds. Like, I don't think the Dodgers are that much better from spending the $170 million. At the end of the day, they did win the World Series. But I agree with you. I think a team could spend closer to $260 million and win the World Series. Do you think that this whole lockout situation helps Craig Breslow or buys him time?
I think he's cooked.
Maybe. I know he's cooked. I mean, but do you think it like
it might like buy Henry time to replace him? That's what it might buy.
Yeah,
agreed.
And here's another thing too: like, who really benefits from a hard cap? I don't think it's the fans. I don't think we benefit from the owners being greedy and now having an actual license to be stingy. I don't think we do. And look at the private equity aspect of it. The Red Sox have, you know, part ownership of the Red Sox is private equity. It's a lower percentage. John Henry's still the principal owner. But I don't think that's good. And if more private equity buys up stakes in organizations across the league, I don't think a salary cap is going to be our friend either as fans. So I stand firmly with the players here, and I'm willing to not have a 2027 season.
I'm not willing for that. Nope.
I'll suck it up. I don't care. And I don't know how catastrophic it would be for owners to not have it. I mean, I think a lot of people would cancel their season tickets. I think that would probably hurt a little bit. I was 11 years old in 1994, so I don't remember how that went and then how the recovery went in 1995. But I hear about Cleveland all the time. They were a good team in the mid-90s. And some people say that that fan base never came back. Never came back. And so I just don't know what kind of damage there could be. But I think the players have the leverage right now. I think they have all the leverage. And I stand firmly with them.
From the standpoint of the resurgence in people turning on and being interested in baseball, the positive effect of the pitch clock and some of the other rule changes, it's just at the worst time for the owners because the league is bouncing back. It's popular again. And the younger people are starting to watch the games again because they're not 4 hours. And then now is the time. So I do agree with that point. If this was 3 years ago, the owners would have more leverage than they have right now.
Well, what's interesting is that by surrendering that season, I sort of agree with you, Terry. I'm willing to throw it away. But what scares me is that if you do, what does it do to the game? The game is in a really good position to continue to leverage some of the improvements to Major League Baseball because for all the things that I don't like – the commissioner of baseball for He has implemented some things that have helped speed up this game and make it more attractive to a younger audience. And to me, to do that and then 2 years later shut down a whole season is a dangerous game to play. I don't know. Will it recover? Probably. But at what cost? I mean, it's not like football. You know, the thing is, football, you could suck over 16, 17 weeks, but it's only 16, 17 weeks. People will be locked in the next season. And what I do think a cap will force, and it has forced in every sport, is that once it exists, it forces owners to have to put good people in the front office. Because once you start leveling the playing field, what separates the good teams from bad teams? The people running them. And that's the true in every sport. So look at football. It's the same 17-week schedule. They all have the same salary cap. What's the difference? Good executives run some teams. Shitty ones run others.
There can be some interesting twists here. Like, what if contracts weren't fully guaranteed? You know, that's another thing that the players may hate, but, you know, I don't have a good way to articulate this, I guess, but, you know, what if it's like protection from injuries or, you know, what if like 80% of the contract is guaranteed, but the rest of it is contingent on health and or performance? What if contracts had incentives automatically built into them to have escalators? I'm not saying this is all realistic, but what I guess I'm trying to say is there might be some creative ways to attack this, and perhaps stuff that we can't even foresee right now.
I think that to add that and a salary cap in the same negotiation is,
well, it could be one or the other. I'm just saying one of these things could be the compromise.
There wasn't even in the initial proposal, so I don't know that it's something right. That.
What I could see is the MLB doing something similar to what the NBA does, where there is a salary cap, but once you reach a certain threshold, if you're above it, I think it's 2 years in a row. In the NBA, it affects your draft capital. In the MLB, I don't think they would do that because, I mean, you're drafting kids that are 15, 16 years old in some cases. But what you could do is do something similar that once you reach that threshold for, let's just say, a year or 2 years in a row, it severely impacts how much you're allowed to spend in that third year, and then you have to reset a clock. I could see something like that.
I think that's a possible landing spot too.
Well, I mean, you sort of have that with the luxury tax. A lot of teams like to reset it after the third year because it does affect your drafting ability as well. So,
well, I think what Chris is saying is increase the severity of the penalty.
Yeah, what I'm saying is because in baseball, I don't think draft capital is like for the NBA and like the NHL and or I said the NFL, where they're literally coming out of college and going right to pro. That's a much bigger impact to a professional team. In baseball, like these guys, you don't see them in some cases 4 or 5 years. I think for baseball, for that reset, quote unquote, if you hit it, that threshold for 2 years, you may actually like not actually be able to spend that much money. And then that would force you to have to trade players or not spend as much or, you know, do some other creative things. And then basically you'd have to do that for 2 years and then you reset and then you start over. So you attach it to actually what you can spend, not necessarily draft capital.
All possibilities.
Yeah, and I mean, they'll probably get to this point at like June of next year when half the season is gone.
Also, a very good likelihood of that happening.
Yeah, I mean, to me, to answer the question I asked you guys, I think, believe it or not, I actually think that this hurts Craig Breslow. I think it helps John Henry as far as his search. I think the more evident that it becomes that there will not be baseball, the more frustrated that the media and that Boston Red Sox fans are going to become with the situation that we have, and they're going to want to rid themselves as early as possible from Craig Breslow. Do you gentlemen have any other thoughts?
Not really. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what develops. I think in the next 24 hours, you're going to have the Bryce Harpers spouting off. And I think it's going to get nasty, but I'm here for it.
All right. Well, we have been the Fire Breslow podcast presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. For more well-written content, you could find our Substack at bastardsofbostonbaseball.com. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great night.